Trib Live Radio presents Off-Road Politics from Main Street to the Beltway with Selena Zito, reporter at the Pittsburgh Trib. Trib Total Media, see what's next. Now, here's your host, Selena Zito.
And we need to do that at every level of our government. The federal government is a limited government. It was designed to be limited. And unfortunately, it's grown well beyond that role, and today it's actually being counterproductive and creating extraordinary damage. The evidence of that is the feelings of Americans today across this country about the future of America. For the first time in a long time, a majority of Americans believe that the nation is headed in the wrong direction. For the first time in our lifetime, the majority of Americans believe that their children will not be as well off as they were. Their children will be worse off than themselves. And that is a big deal, especially if it's true. Because leaving our children better off than ourselves is our identity as a nation. Every country in the world has rich people. Even the poorest country in the world has rich people. What makes America special is this has always been a place where if you work hard and persevere, you can leave your children better off than yourself. This hasn't been true throughout human history. For much of human history, people were trapped. You could only be whatever your parents were. So if your parents were rich or famous, that was great news. If they weren't, you were stuck. Most of us don't know what that feels like, but imagine what that feels like. To live in a society that says to you, it doesn't matter how talented you are, how good your ideas are, how hard you work, how long you're willing to persevere, none of it matters. You don't come from the right people. And so you can't get ahead. Well, that's been the human condition for almost all of history. The exception has been this country. Now, I know about this reality not because I read about it in a magazine or in a book or because I watched a documentary. I know it the same reason you know it, because I've seen it in my own life. As the speaker mentioned a moment ago, my parents were not born in the United States. They were born on the island of Cuba. They came here in 1956 because it was the only place for people like them, born into poor families with no connection to power, that they had. And my parents in America, they never became rich. They never became famous. Had I not run for president or public office, no one would have ever heard about them. But my parents were successful. They were successful because working as a bartender in a maid, they owned a home in a safe and stable neighborhood. They were able to retire with dignity. And most important of all for them, they were able to leave their children better off than themselves. This is our story as a nation, and the fact that it is slipping away from millions of Americans is not just disturbing, it threatens our standing, our identity. And it brings us to the fundamental question in this election in 2016. It is not simply a choice between Republicans and Democrats. It is a much more important choice than that. This election is a generational choice about what kind of country we will be in the 21st. And there are only two options. Our children will either be the freest and most prosperous Americans that have ever lived, or we will be the first generation to leave our children worse off than ourselves. These are the only two options. There is no other way forward. And today, we are on the road to decline. We are on the road to leaving our children worse off than ourselves. And in no small part, because of policies from our governments, especially our federal government, that are holding this nation back. And so this election has to be a time to turn the page, because the disconnect between Washington and the rest of the country has never been broader, has never been larger. We have leaders in both parties that are disconnected from the reality of everyday life. They don't know what it's like or forgot what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck. They don't know what it's like or forgot what it's like to try to keep their business open at a time when more businesses are dying than starting. They don't know what it's like or never have student loans like I did, over $1,000 a month when I first got married. My wife, if she found out about that before, she might have answered differently. She's always wondering, who's this Sally Mae you keep spending? And not only are they disconnected, they're out of date. Our policies are outdated. This economy looks nothing like what it looked like 5 years ago, not to mention 50 years ago. And yet we have retirement programs on the a higher education system from the 50s, anti-poverty programs from the 60s, energy policies from the 70s, tax policies from the 80s and 90s, and regulatory policy that continues to grow without any abatement. Our policies are outdated and out of touch, and that's why we must turn the page in both our party and our country and allow a new generation of leaders at every level of government to assume the mantle and apply the principles of our founding to the challenges of our time. That's what this election must be about. If we make the right choices, we won't just have an America as good as it used to be. We will have an America better than it's ever been. But that was in three things. Let me just stop here and say, I found a cufflink on the, say somebody lost their cufflink. It's either that or a bug from the Chinese government trying to. Well, the good news is I cleaned my server this morning once again. So. That is a what they call a joke. How can we have a better future? We have to do three things. And they're not complicated. I'll go through them quickly. And you'll understand that, especially those of you who serve in the state legislature, because we're trying to do that here. The first thing is we need policies that make us globally competitive again. The speaker touched upon this tax policy. Our federal tax policies are not globally competitive. We have the most expensive business tax rate and the most complicated in the world. And that's why we need tax reform. We have regulations that are crushing. They're not hurting, they are crushing small business. Because they can't afford to hire an army of lawyers and lobbyists. A big corporation, they don't like the regulations. Sometimes they actually do like the regulations because it protects their business model. But they don't, even if they don't like the regulations, they can afford to deal with it because they can hire the lawyers, the lobbyists, and the people to deal with the regulators. Not the small business. Not the small business. That's why we need to limit regulations to a regulatory budget that caps how much federal regulations can cost our economy. We have a $19 trillion national debt. $19 trillion. That is bigger than our GDP, bigger than the size of our economy. And no one's doing anything about it. In 2 weeks, Washington will raise the debt limit once again. And you would think that would be a reminder that, hey guys, you have a debt problem. No one's doing a thing about it in either party. You can't fix the debt if you don't fix Social Security and Medicare for future generations. And I say that to you as someone from Florida. You may not know this, there are a lot of people on Medicare and Social Security in Florida. One of them is my mother. I am against any changes that are bad for my mother. But, my Social Security and Medicare and my children's is going to have to work differently than it works for current retirees or for people about to retire. Or it won't exist, and it'll bankrupt our country. Because the driver of our debt isn't foreign aid, it's less than 1% of our budget. It isn't defense spending, it isn't. It's the way these important programs are structured 30, 40 years from now. The fourth point is we have to fully utilize our energy resources, and the speaker touched upon that a moment ago. I don't mind, we should lead the world in solar and wind. And natural gas and solar, wind, and biofuels, and everything. But we're crazy if we don't lead the world in natural gas and oil. Natural gas exploration isn't just important for this state. You know what it means for America? It means cheaper utility rates for our homes and a lower cost of manufacturing for our businesses. You know what that means? If we can lower the cost of manufacturing in America, we will have a manufacturing renaissance. We can once again be a country that makes things. We can once again be an economy that makes things. And that will change things. And we have, lastly, we have to repeal and replace Obamacare. There's no way back to that. It costs too much, it covers too little, and it encourages employers not to hire people. I imagine other than that, it works well. We should repeal it and put every American in charge of their own health care decisions. Allow every American to control their own health care. I'm rushing through it because Fox and Friends waits for no one. So I have to hurry up. But I want to get to all these points. Allow every American to control their own pre-tax health insurance money. And they can use it to buy the kind of health insurance they want from any company in America that will sell it to them across state lines. Meaning you can buy from a health insurer in Florida, and I can buy from one in Pennsylvania. If we do these things, our private sector is going to do the rest. The speaker mentioned this a moment ago. This room is full of people signing the front of a check. You are the American private sector. You are the ones that create jobs and opportunity. It is the job of those of us in public service to put in place policies that make it easier for you to do that. And today we're not making it easier, we're making it harder. If we do some of the things I just outlined, we won't just have an economic recovery, we'll have an economic renaissance. And you, the American private sector, the most creative and innovative people in the world, the most productive workers on this planet, will create millions, not just new jobs, but millions of jobs that pay more than the jobs we've lost. But that alone won't be enough, because those new jobs will require more skill for them. Which is why the second thing we have to do is we must modernize what we mean when we say higher education. For the life of me, I do not understand why we started telling young people in America that if you go and work with your hands, that's for the people that aren't smart enough to go to college. It just isn't true. Here's the truth. A welder makes a lot more than a Greek philosopher. And yet we don't train enough welders, or plumbers, or pipe fitters. We don't educate enough people to fix airplanes or cars. And here's the sad part. We can do this while they're still in high school. Which is why I want to open up Pell Grants, federal financial aid, so a student at 16 or 17 years of age doesn't have to wait until they're 18, 19, or 20. They can go to high school in the morning. They can use Pell Grant and federal financial aid to go to trade school in the afternoon. And when they graduate, they don't just have a high school diploma. They are certified and ready to go work, fixing airplanes, fixing cars, welding, and doing plumbing work and electrical work. These are good-paying jobs, and I will be the vocational education president because we need to train more people to do these jobs. We're still going to have four-year colleges. Otherwise, how would we have college football? So we're still going to have four-year colleges. Although I think the welders might be pretty good. But anyway, we're going to have four-year colleges. But we can't continue to have people borrowing thousands of dollars for degrees that do not need the jobs. And I have an extensive platform on those issues, but here's the one that I really am proud of. When I'm president, before you take out a student loan, schools will be required to tell you how much people make when they graduate from that school with that degree. So you can decide what you're going to do. We're not going to outlaw these degrees. If you're in the liberal arts colleges somewhere, don't worry. We're not going to outlaw these degrees. But I do think our students deserve to know that the market for philosophers has tightened over the last 2,000 years. Maybe we're in a graduate school. It's fine. I'm just saying, you deserve to have this information. If we can do these two things, make it easier for our people and cheaper for them to acquire the skills they need for the 21st century, and make it easier for the private sector in the 21st century, as I said earlier, we're going to have an economic renaissance. It'll be the greatest, most prosperous era in American history because this new economy is tailor-made for us. You realize there are now hundreds of millions of people on the planet that because of the spread of free enterprise can afford to buy what you make here in Pennsylvania, can afford to buy what we sell, our services and our goods, can afford to trade with us. This is an extraordinary development. We have to take full advantage of it. But it leads me to my third and final point. None of this will matter if we aren't safe. And that is the number one obligation of the federal government, to keep our nation safe from threats from abroad. Only the federal government can truly do that. It is its primary responsibility. The federal government's involved in all sorts of things it doesn't need to be involved in. It doesn't need to be involved in telling states and local communities how to run the K-12 system. It doesn't need to be involved in doing all sorts of other things, but it needs to be involved. In fact, it must keep us safe, and today it is failing on every front. It has failed to secure our borders, and it is eviscerating our defense capabilities at a time when the world is more dangerous than at any other moment in the lifetime of anyone in this room. North Korea is run by a lunatic who happens to possess dozens of nuclear weapons. Iran is about to receive $150 billion of sanctions relief, which they will use to sponsor anti-American terrorism, build a long-range missile that can reach the United States, and ultimately buy or build their own nuclear weapon. The Russians are governed by a gangster who is dividing Europe, threatening NATO, and sowing increased instability in the Middle East. The Chinese are undertaking the most rapid military expansion in human history, and taking over the South China Sea, the most important shipping lane in the world. And multiple radical jihadist groups, located in dozens of countries across multiple continents, threaten our future and our security. They even recruit Americans using social media to join their cause. This is a dangerous world. And in the face of this danger, we have an administration that is gutting, absolutely gutting our defense capabilities. It's doing nothing to balance our budget, but it will lead to the oldest and smallest Air Force and Navy in our lifetime, lead to 40,000 more additional troop reductions in the Army. This is irresponsible. When I'm president, we will reinvigorate defense spending because, as I said, the cuts are doing nothing to balance our budget. It's a drop in the proverbial bucket in terms of the scope of the size of our annual deficit of debt. But if we don't do this, we will one day not be able to meet our adversary and defeat them. And we will not be able to keep the promise we made to our men and women in uniform, that they will always be the best trained, best equipped, and have more information than any adversary they will ever face.
Second, we need to take care of them after they take care of us, which is why the VA has to be reformed. I am proud that even though I was in the minority, last year we passed a law that made the VA more accountable. It gave the VA secretary the power to fire people that aren't doing their jobs. There are good people at the VA, but there are people that aren't doing their jobs too. And it gave them the power to fire them. That's the good news. The bad news is they've only fired one person. And even that's not people. When I'm president, people will be held accountable. And more importantly, the VA benefits are going to follow the veteran, not the veteran follow the benefits. If you are a veteran, you will be able to take your VA benefits to any doctor, any hospital, any clinic, any facility that's prepared to see you. And the second thing we need is a foreign policy of moral clarity. That means our allies know they can trust us, and our adversaries know not to test us. It's common sense. It's the opposite of what we have now. Our allies do not trust us. You know, for example, in the Middle East, there is only one free enterprise, pro-American democracy, in the entire Middle East, the state of Israel. There's only one. And today we have a president that treats the prime minister of Israel with less respect than he treats the Ayatollah in Iran. That will change. That will change when I'm president. And our allies will know they can trust us. And we'll begin on day one by canceling this horrifying deal with Iran on my first day. So let me wrap this up by just saying that I point out these things to you because it shows that we can fix every challenge we There is no challenge before this country we cannot fix, but we have to do it. And what we're being asked to do is no different than what the generations before us did. Every generation of Americans faced great challenge, some greater than ours. This idea that America has had long periods of time where it didn't face any challenges just isn't true. This nation was founded in a great challenge. This nation was founded by declaring independence from the most powerful empire on the planet. And then it had to survive a civil war that violently divided it. Then it had to face a Great World War, and then a Great Depression, and then a Second World War, and then a Cold War, and then the 1960s, which divided this country generationally over Vietnam, regionally over civil rights. We have always faced great challenges. Ours is not the story of a nation that had it easy. Ours is the story of a nation and of a people that in each generation confronted their challenges and embraced their opportunities. And as a result, for over two centuries now, each generation of Americans has left the next generation better off. And now it is our turn. That is the task before us now. And we will either face it, or history will condemn us as the first generation to fail to do what those before us did. And we're all called to do this. Many of you are already involved in that by serving in the state government. Let me just tell you that state government service is one of the most fulfilling experiences you will ever have. It allows you to deal directly with the issues in people's lives. The real innovation in American government comes from the state level. It doesn't come from the federal level. And it never will, by the way. It will always come from the state and local level. Some of you have served our nation in uniform. Some of you will leave here today and go out and create more jobs because you're going to grow your business. And that's how free enterprise works. That's why people in this country get ahead. We are all called to this task of leaving America better off. I have always felt strongly called to that. Because America isn't just the country I was born in. It's the nation that literally changed the history of my family. I described my parents to you earlier. My father had it particularly difficult. He lived in Havana when he was 4 days shy of his 9th birthday, his mother died. And so he had to leave school and go work at 9 years of age. He never went back to school. And he would work for the next 7 years of his life. In America, my parents, you know, when they were young people have big dreams. They had big dreams. They became impossible, to no fault of their own. They came here to this nation, they found a new dream. Their new dream, the new purpose of their life, became to give their kids the chance to do all the things they never could, to ensure that all the doors that had closed for them would open for us. And so they worked hard in America. My mother built aluminum chairs at a factory. She was a cashier at a coffee shop and a hotel on Miami Beach. She was a maid at a hotel in Las Vegas, and she was a stock clerk at Kmart. My father was primarily a banquet bartender, which means he was a bartender in rooms like this, at hotels like this, well into his 70s. He worked on nights, and on weekends, and on holidays, and on days he didn't feel like working. He was proud of the work he had, he was grateful for it. But that's not the life he wanted for us.
He stood in a room like this behind a small portable bar for all those years. So one day I could have the chance to stand up in front of a room like this, or anything else I wanted. The journey from behind that bar in the back of the room to the life I live today is for me the essence of the American dream. And the truth is, it's not just my story. It is, in fact, our story. It is what unifies us as one people. For here in America, we are literally all just a generation or two removed from the exact same story I just told you. In this country, we are all just a generation or two removed from someone who made our future the very purpose of their lives. You know that this is true because you saw your parents work two jobs and sacrifice. You saw what your grandparents did for your parents, or maybe it's what you are doing for your children now. And it reminds us that whether or not we remain a special country will be determined by whether or not people can still do for their children what my parents did for me and what your parents did for you. Can the men and women who work at this banquet here today do that for their children? Can the people who clean my hotel room this morning do that for their children? Can the people who work just blocks from this place, cleaning streets, building things, driving taxi cabs, and I guess Uber cars these days, can they do for their children what our parents did for us? That is what will decide whether we're still a special nation. And the answer is, if we wanted to, they can. But we have it within our reach, not just to leave America as good as it used to be, but better than it's ever been. But the time to act is now. We cannot afford another four years like the last 8 years. If we have another 4 years like the last 8 years, I'm not sure I can give you the same speech 4 years from now. There are things that may slip from our reach. But if we do what needs to be done in this election, if we confront our challenges and embrace our opportunities, if we turn the page on a history we're proud of and embrace the future that awaits, then we won't just save the American dream. We will expand it to reach more people and change more lives than ever before. And the 21st century won't just be as good as the 20th century. It will be better. It will be a new American century. So I'm grateful for the chance to speak to you here today because Pennsylvania is a place we want to do well in. I'm grateful for your endorsement. I'm even more grateful for the doctor's endorsement. I think that's what she was talking about when she said that's what they were. And I'm grateful to all of you for giving me the chance to talk to you. Because I can tell you this, I want to be the Republican nominee, and God willing, I will be. And if I'm the Republican nominee, and we win the state of Pennsylvania, we will be in the White House, and together we can usher in that new American century.